Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRouche Show for Saturday, January 5th, 2008. I welcome everyone to the new year. This is our first show of the new year. And I am not exaggerating when I say our topic today is what you could call the most important political event taking place right now in the United States, in fact, the world, if we can shift the United States. Our topic is, it's the crash, stupid, organizing for the emergency financial measures, the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, in order to shift towards an economic recovery and not chaos and hell. And with us to discuss this organizing process, we have people from three states off-site. I welcome from Massachusetts in Boston, Ed Hamler. Welcome.
Thank you.
He's in the LaRouche Youth Movement office there. And likewise, in Texas, in the capital, in Austin, we welcome from the LaRouche Youth Movement, Chris Landry. Hi.
How are you?
And I'm glad to welcome from Pennsylvania, speaking to us from Philadelphia, from the LaRouche Political Action Committee, Phil Valenti. Welcome, Phil.
Hi, Marcia.
And I will say, those of you who have seen this show advertised on the LaRouche Pub website, that's LaRouchePub.com, we also promised our co-editor for economics, Paul Gallagher, but and my name's Marcia Mary Baker. I'm economics editor with Paul. But right at the moment, he's called away to help edit and put to bed the special we're getting out for our second issue of the new year for EIR, which is on the global picture of collapse and crises, not just hotspots, but the emergency situations as we have all seen in the Indian subcontinent, Pakistan, in Ibero-America, elsewhere, and one of which is the blowout of county and state budgets, the unemployment in the United States, the economic breakdown that's part of this systemic financial collapse. So Paul Gallagher cannot be with us today, but we have plenty to talk about and plenty of people to have things to say. All I want to say now, and then we're going to turn to Ed Hamler in Boston, who will lead off the discussion, is that people around the world should know we are creating a storm in the country while the U.S. Congress is still out of session until January 15. And on January 17, that'll be a Thursday, a week from this coming Thursday, will be a webcast, a live video based out of Washington, D.C. by Lyndon LaRouche, an international webcast at 1 p.m. Eastern United States time. Plan on that. Plan group meetings for that. The title of it, I believe, is 6 months into the greatest crash ever. So that's the backdrop for why I say getting the updates on what's involved in forcing attention to the economic reality in the United States and abroad is our focus today. So in Boston, Ed Hamler, you've been part of a team that's been at everywhere from the State House of Massachusetts to New Hampshire. I'll tell everyone that Ed has to leave in a few minutes, maybe 5, 10, 20 minutes, in order to for organizing events over this weekend. But Ed, what do you want to bring out about what you've been up to?
Well, we've been up here looking at the whole period from now until the elections as one idea. Given the two pamphlets that we're putting out, the Is the Devil in Your Laptop pamphlet and the Thanksgiving pamphlet, there's a very clear sense of an orientation of what should be the defining factors of the presidential race. And so our intent is to just do that, is to define and to shape the process by which the next president will be elected.
Now, well, one thing is we've seen the Iowa, well, let me put it this way. We've seen the treatment of the Iowa campaign. It's kind of like, I think Mr. LaRouche was, or other people were saying, it's like having candidates on who will be president of La La Land or Laputa from Jonathan Swift's Gulliver's Travels. But so you're talking about shaping the process, and you had what I hear is called a kind of saturation distribution of these LaRouche Political Action Committee pamphlets in certain target zones of Massachusetts?
Yeah, what we've been doing is since we've gotten the breakthrough in Lawrence, Massachusetts, with the passage of our Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, we went back to the state legislature, which has just reopened in Massachusetts, and we had a package which included that resolution, but also other materials involving the HBPA. What we're finding out so far is that there's a high recognition of it. We just got another endorser from that deployment, and what the plan is now is to hit the districts in areas that we've been focusing on, like Worcester. We've been focusing on the city council there, Brockton. There's some people that want to introduce it there in the city council. We've already got a Lawrence. So the idea is to crossfire the work with the city councils and the population through getting out massive loads of literature and deployments, and to crossfire that back into the state legislature.
And as the weeks go by, let me ask you, you're implying you're going back to people you've talked to in recent months, like you're there in Boston, you have the state legislature. Do you see a shift, or do you see a change in reaction in the halls of the legislature?
Well, one thing that's very obvious to most people, that if you look at the state budgets around the country, including Massachusetts, there's a clear recognition that nothing that the state is going to do is going to work. And mostly what the state house does here is deals with the budget, like all year, almost. And at the same time, the recognition of Representative Frank's proposal in D.C., actually one state representative here identified some of the bailouts coming from Washington as bailouts, and his major concern over our legislation was that it wasn't, he hoped that it wasn't another bailout. So people have been following the developments, and I think a lot of people are starting to come to their senses about the fact that there really is no other alternative. And also following Alan Greenspan's statements about how his mystical powers of forecasting don't really exist. That had a good effect. So we're seeing all across the board, the population has generally been ready and responding. They've been calling in from these districts like Lawrence and Worcester. And once again, the idea is to shoot that right back in to the state house that is becoming a little more ready than they were before.
Thank you. We have another question that comes up before the show that I want to put to you, but I want to make a plug. Everyone should look at the first issue of EIR for this new year. Number one, it's technically January 4th, and get it on LaRouchePub.com. But you'll see the lead survey article of just what Ed Hamler's mentioned. For the national section, it's called Financial Crisis Puts HBPA on State Legislative Agenda. And, Ed, I understand Massachusetts, it's about $1 billion budget deficit, and what we've heard from your governor is he was trying to promote before Christmas that legalizing slot machines, which Phil Villani could say a lot about, is supposed to be the solution to everything. Is that right?
Yeah. This is a... I mean, it's a funny situation because on the one hand, it is ridiculous, but on the other hand, what the hell else is he supposed to do unless we define the terms in which the governor acts? And that's what we intend to do. We have two squads in New Hampshire right now. Our governor has already supported Obama, and we're there shaping the issues that are going to go into next week's primary in New Hampshire. And here, once again, is to pull together the right kinds of forces here around our Homeowners and Bank Protection Act that will get the governor a sense of an alternative to this insanity. And in order for it to work, it does have to be a national effort. So that is what we're working on.
Well, let me ask you one more thing before you have to go. This is the question that came in beforehand. I heard that the team that you, the Lurch Youth Movement, has had in New Hampshire is finding a great response to what was called, I heard an hour ago, running a policy for president instead of one of these people in denial for president. And is it the case that you were getting out the literature describing it's about the only policy literature circulating in New Hampshire? Is that what you're getting?
Yeah, I mean, the Iowa caucuses were funny because it was Oprah Winfrey and Chuck Norris that won the caucuses there.
Right.
There were no policies that were represented. And I just got a text message of John Edwards shooting some hoops and crossing over some eighth graders and laying up finger rolls at a high school basketball court instead of talking to voters. And so there's no surprise that when people that are totally politicized about to lose their homes coming up to us, there's no surprise that they'd be excited to actually discuss ideas, find out what LaRouche has been up to, find out where our youth movement is, how we can mobilize. We've actually been meeting state reps in New Hampshire when they heard that the HBPA is on the table right there. They're ready to meet, and they want to figure out how to push it through. So it's a good response.
Well, thanks, Ed, for taking the time. Do you want to say anything else? But this is a good opener.
I don't really have much else.
Okay. Well, have a good meeting tonight.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot. And with that, let's go geographically to the Southwest before we get to Texas to fill in Pennsylvania, because I want to point out here, Ed was talking about material circulated by the LaRouche Political Action Committee. The latest pamphlet I have in my hand, if you haven't seen it, go on LaRouchePAC.com, LaRouchePAC.com, and it is a pamphlet released just in the last few days called Capitalism and Its Law by Lyndon LaRouche, and it has the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act guidelines. It has other things in it, and this has on its back a map that shows that there are six states where the resolution supporting congressional emergency action for this HBPA is active, another four or five states where it's going to be introduced, many other states, including Texas, where city councils are active. So, Phil, Pennsylvania's been leading the pack. Why don't you just summarize the situation as you see it?
Well, we have an advantage in that we've been working with State Representative Harold James for many years. And he went through a certain process over years in terms of his relationship and understanding of Lyndon LaRouche and the LaRouche Youth Movement. Actually, meeting the LaRouche Youth Movement, the creation of the LaRouche Youth Movement, really was crucial, I think, for him getting a deeper understanding and commitment to these ideas. If you remember back in 1999, I guess it was, when the mayor of Philadelphia was targeted by Ashcroft and the FBI a month before the election for mayor. The African-American mayor, John Street, running for re-election. Harold James asked the Lyndon LaRouche, asked the LaRouche Youth Movement to come in and beat back that attack by the Justice Department, which they did brilliantly. And there were other aspects of that campaign I'd like to talk about, because it had a direct impact on what the Philadelphia City Council did in 2007. But we basically took up Lyndon LaRouche's initiative directive in late August, early September, where he said, look, the Congress is jammed up, they're controlled. The only way this is going to be done is you have to build excruciating pressure from the base, from the state and local level. So Representative James was willing to take the initiative on introducing a resolution, and I was up in the state capitol in Harrisburg, and we had carloads of the LaRouche Youth Movement meet me up there, drove up from Leesburg, Virginia, and we walked the halls of the state legislature, and I was hoping that we might get 20 co-sponsors on the Homeowner Bank Protection Act resolution, and when the dust settled on October 2nd, we had 40 co-sponsors, which nobody expected. And it was a shock to me, shock to Representative James, as a testimony to the work that we did, the youth movement did. and also the reality of the economic collapse. We even had some significant Republican leaders sign on in the state legislature. And then that, soon after, we were able to get the agreement of the committee chairman, Representative Curtis Thomas, because the resolution, of course, was referred to a committee and then goes to a subcommittee, and then it takes months for anything to happen, if anything ever happens. And in this case, the representative, Curtis Thomas, agreed to have a hearing, you know, within a month of it going to his committee, which is highly unusual. And one of the reasons is that his own father has been a victim of mortgage fraud or potential mortgage fraud. He told the story about his 89-year-old father who was convinced to get a 30-year mortgage refinancing by Wells Fargo at the age of 89 and has been given nothing but grief by this mortgage company, threatened with foreclosure, late fees. So he had a personal reason also, knowledge, let's say, of why he wanted this to be done and these people to be brought to justice. So in the build-up to that hearing, we decided, look, let's get something to show in terms of mass support in the state and take up Lynn's idea of contacting these city councils and borough councils. And we're able to do that going into the hearing, and it's just taken off after that.
Hearing was November 29th?
November 29th, yeah. And I should tell the story about the Philadelphia City Council, because it turns out that one of the key people in the city council staff there, her name is Latrice Bryant. She's an aide to Councilman Wilson Good Jr. Wilson Good Jr. is the son of the first African-American mayor of Philadelphia. He's a city councilman at large. He just won a landslide victory in November, re-election, and he usually takes the point on these kinds of, you know, quote-unquote people's issues in terms of defending the common person. And so it turns out Latrice Bryant is his legislative director. Now, she had run for state representative in 2004 in the Democratic primary. Harold James knew her. We spoke to her. So we set up a coalition. She endorsed Lyndon LaRouche for president in the Democratic primary, and we endorsed her for state representative in the Democratic primary. And the LaRouche Youth Movement and she and her supporters campaigned together in her district, door to door. And I think Ed was there. Ed Hamler was there at the time. And so she didn't win. Of course, we were going for 15% for Lyndon LaRouche. Harold James endorsed Lyndon LaRouche for president in the Democratic primary, too, in 2004. So that was a heck of a scene, because Representative James taped radio ads endorsing LaRouche for president, which is still remembered to this day, the impact of those ads. And even though a lot of Representative James's friends in the Democratic Party went hysterical, said, you know, Harold, you're going to destroy yourself. Your political career will be destroyed. Democratic Party is going to run against you, and they're going to drive you out of office, and went on and on like this. And of course, nothing like that ever happened. I think he's run unopposed ever since for re-election. But because we had that contact and relationship with Latrice Bryant, here it is, almost 4 years later. I go into the councilman's office, and she's the legislative director. So she introduced me to him, and he took the point. And they did. It took a lot of ups and downs there, and missed signals and whatnot. But finally, the City Council of Philadelphia passed the resolution. Not only did they pass it unanimously, but every member of the Philadelphia City Council co-sponsored it, too.
Oh.
And it was passed on November 29th, the morning of November 29th, and she gave me a call on my cell phone out in Harrisburg saying, okay, you can announce it's been passed unanimously. That was just about 2 hours before the hearing started.
Right. And just throw in here, Phil, that all the major cities, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Erie, Harrisburg, the capital, I mean, that's among the top in the state have passed this, correct?
Yeah, I would say that we have municipalities representing about 2.5 million Pennsylvanians that have passed the resolutions endorsing the Homeowner Bank Protection Act and Representative James, the H.R. 418 at this point.
And what's the population now, 11 to 13 million?
No, I think it's 10 to 11 at this point, something like that.
Because it's losing, right?
Yeah, it has been slipping.
Mm-hmm. And there are many more things to hear about, but what's the Pennsylvania's in session. is there something specific coming up, or the process will take shape over the coming days?
Well, as far as the legislature is concerned, their actual session starts the 14th of January.
Okay.
And the chairman of the committee said at the hearing that he wants to move this resolution, which, most of us were not even, I was certainly wasn't thinking about actually passing the resolution. I was happy to get it introduced, and it became a rallying point, and our focus was on Congress, but it looks like they actually want to pass it. So that would be a real plus. So it may pass the committee. I mean, there's a certain process of discussion with the Republicans, too, on the committee. Various ways we can clarify the resolution or strengthen it, and in discussion with Lynn on this, and they may pass it out of the committee. There's no meeting scheduled yet, but the next step in terms of the legislative process would be, if the committee passes it, then it goes to the floor of the House of Representatives. There's still a number of pitfalls there, but who knows where we'll be then? In the middle of the end of January.
That's right. With the pace of events. Before the show is over, I want to give some of the figures that Paul Gallagher and EIR put together. With the pace of daily unemployment or rate of foreclosures or any other measure you want, decrepit infrastructure affecting people and bringing them into reality, who knows as days go on. Before we get to Texas, so let's go back and forth, but Phil, do you want to say something about the impact of the financial or economic reality or the foreclosure process? I mean, apart from every family has some personal experience who isn't living under a rock. But what do you, can you generalize anything about Pennsylvania? Does something jump out?
Well, sure. What's happening now more and more is that that the members of these local councils have less problems seeing that it's not about home foreclosures per se or about subprime mortgages. This was the big thing in the beginning. But we've hammered away at this, and the reality now is reinforcing that it's about the collapse of the whole financial system and the whole banking system and the whole economy, and that it was triggered by the mortgage crisis. But we're talking about the collapse of the banking system, the Federal Reserve hyperinflationary bailout, that what Lynn warned about is now happening. So they have little problem seeing, this is a very important emphasis in our organizing, is to take it out of the realm of home foreclosures solely and the subprime question and predatory lending and all of that, and say, look, the point is that the financial system has been based on gambling and speculating on home mortgages and mortgage-backed securities and financial derivatives, that they use these mortgages like gambling chips for speculation. They've created tens of trillions of dollars or more of a financial bubble that's collapsing, and it's collapsing the banking system and the whole economy. Bingo, start with that. And that takes it out of the realm of the question of, is it, the irresponsible people who got in over their heads? This is the kind of thing you got before, is that why should we bail out irresponsible people who borrowed money they knew they couldn't pay it back, and we shouldn't have to bail them out, and this kind of argument, which, of course, is promoted by the neocons and whatnot out there. But less and less and less, almost completely gone. And some of these members of these council, like Representative Curtis Thomas, I mentioned his father was victimized this way, just spoke to a member of city council of a city in western Pennsylvania just today who's retired. They had to refinance their home because her husband lost his job after 41 years, and she was pursued by any number of mortgage brokers to get her an adjustable rate mortgage. And she, was persistent enough or firm enough to resist that and got a fixed-rate mortgage of something like 7%, which it seems high to me. But she said that they're having difficulty. Their cost of living, of course, is not matching inflation, obviously. So even these members of council, another council president up in northern Pennsylvania who's on near the New York border, said, yes, we have a big problem with foreclosures in our – this is a city of 6,000 people, Bradford, Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah.
And said, because there's an Indian casino across the border in New York State that opened up. So people are desperate. This is similar to the story told by Lamar Lemons about Detroit with the casinos there. That it makes things fantastically worse because people get desperate and they go and gamble and lose everything and wind up losing their homes, their cars, and everything else. So they passed the resolution, in short order in the city council in Bradford.
Right there. Well, let's go back and forth on this. Chris, you're there in Austin, Texas, and the Texas legislature, you said before the show, only meets every 2 years. Although everyone listening, you know, meet or not, that doesn't matter. But it is true that by the end of January, 36, at least more or less out of 50 states, will be in active session. But in Texas, Chris, you've been almost crisscrossing the state on to get people to face reality. What do you want to, where do you want to start about giving a report on that?
Well, good place to start is that the one, Texas is not usually considered to be a quote unquote the worst in terms of the housing market. It's generally thought of to be on the East Coast and the West Coast. So in the beginning, trying to get people to really grasp the nature of the crisis was like, well, the problem's not here. You know, we don't have to deal with it. It's just the problem with the subprimes, and we have a minimal amount of those in this state. It's really these other states that have the problem. So there was an issue of the locality of the crisis that was sort of ingrained in the minds of a lot of people. But one thing we decided to do is that we said, well, look, you know, this is going to get worse. In June, when the crisis really began to unravel, and then you had in July, things got worse, and finally in August, the thing really blew out. People perked up at that point, I think, and that's when we really began organizing. And we did go straight to the Texas legislature that, of course, is not in session, because in Texas you have 6 months every 2 years, and it's a very limited government. To be a representative, you have to be a very established individual, because you don't get paid very much. I think it's like $400 a month or something really incredibly low. So you, it almost forces you to have your own professional business or to be an established person. In other words, you keep, you know, the poor lower 80% out of the government, right? Or what little government there is. So we went to the Texas state legislature and just, you know, organized staffers and talked to various people and, you know, basically briefed the entire Texas House and Senate, at least the staffs, on exactly what we were proposing and what the crisis was. And this was in the very beginning of when, like I said, when it blew out right after the Bear Stearns, their two hedge funds went under. And we got fairly decent responses, nothing too significant. But I think then, you know, after that was taken care of, we then made the decision to say, well, you know, we really got to go and start the fire under these guys through the local levels, like in terms of city councils and county commissions. And so that's how we ended up going, for instance, down to the Rio Grande Valley, where the importance down there is not just the issue of the housing foreclosures. It is a big issue down there. But more importantly, it's the issue of what Lyndon LaRouche would call the physical economy, the development of the physical economy. And, for instance, you know, the agriculture, the transportation down there, the quote-unquote immigration crisis, which is not a result of immigration, but it's a result of, you know, 30 years of destructive economic policies. So we had sort of an understanding of the crisis when we went down there, and we approached it from the standpoint of saying, here's what we have to do to save the economy from a complete collapse due, you know, from people being foreclosed on en masse, and saving our banking system. And once that was put on the table, a good understanding of why that was necessary to do in order to rebuild our economy was, I mean, people got it. They said, okay, you know, I see what you're talking about with, say, for instance, the infrastructure projects, like with NAWAPA or NAWAPA Plus, which includes the cross-border development with Mexico. And we got a lot of very good responses there. So, and the good thing also about, say, for instance, the city councils and the commissions is that city councilmen are not as ambitious or, I guess, scared to be, you know, to do certain things. You know, they're more citizens, I think, who decided to take responsibility for their community. So, and once we made the case clear on what was actually happening, you know, I think it was just a matter of time, and they said, well, we see what you're talking about, and we'll endorse this. So that was, you know, that was the
situation down there in the valley. Of course, the idea was to move throughout the entire state and get the, you know, get all the state legislators to endorse this. And this is actually in the works right now, and which is why I really don't want to, I really wouldn't want to go through precisely what's in the works, but more importantly, just, you know, what the mobilization is in terms of the HBPA. So we made our way up to Dallas and Fort Worth just after the new year, after going through the valley. And the response we got from there, we met with everybody in terms of state legislators, various city councils in the area. There's many cities up here. And the response is changing. I think it's getting better because of the nature of the crisis. I think you know, you can actually say the crisis in the situation is our ally to get people to see the reality of the situation. For instance, there's a lot of Republicans up in the Northeast Texas area, and a lot of Republicans that we met with. And, you know, these guys are typically known to be the fiscally responsible conservative types. And, you know, when you actually broke it down and you discussed this idea, like, you're going to have mass foreclosures, you're going to have having a complete banking crisis as a result of this, and the only proposed solutions have been bailouts, and then, of course, you have Bush's plan, which is purely a voluntary plan for the banks to renegotiate the contracts, which a lot of them really don't want to do because they don't want to admit how bad the situation really is. And they agreed. There was a lot of agreement among Republicans and Democrats alike about there's nothing being done. A response that we got out of one city council was, you know, this woman was just, you know, astonished. She was like, wow, like I was waiting for somebody to do something about this. You know, as if nothing really has been done, which she's right. Nothing really has been done to stop this crisis. And another thing that was also good to point out, as Phil brought up, you got to make the point clear to a lot of these politicians that we're not proposing a bailout of the system, which is what has been proposed thus far, and it's not working. It's making the situation worse. It's what Lyndon LaRouche had equated to spraying cold gasoline on a hot fire, right? And that's essentially what's happening with the bailouts. So we got a lot of very good responses. We met with also, you're probably familiar with Marcia, a Dallas County commissioner who was the first signer on to the HBPA here in Texas. Has a radio show in Dallas that he goes on every couple of weeks or so. But he had Harley on the show, who's the Western State spokesman down here for Lyndon LaRouche. And, you know, went through a very good dialogue with him about the nature of the crisis, the fact that you have to address it from the top, you have to address it from the system point of view. You can't just look at it as individual localized occurrences. And, you know, we got a lot of good responses out of that because people were calling in to our office, and one guy who had called into our office before from that show was, you know, a young guy up here who had actually gone to our website, printed out a ton of literature, you know, and just went out and started distributing it on his own because, you know, he felt like after hearing the show, he was sort of compelled to act. And, we met with him actually up here as well and, you know, had a very good discussion with him, and he took a bunch more literature and he's going to be helping us out up here in the, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So there's a lot of good things are going on now. We're moving down the state now from Dallas-Fort Worth down into Austin and then continuing on back down to South Texas, where a lot of things are still in the process of unfolding. And like I said, in the next couple of weeks, I think there's going to be a lot that will be occurring that I don't want to disclose right now. I think it's better that way, but I think in the next couple of weeks, you're going to be seeing a whole lot coming out of the Southwest here. So hopefully that gives you a good idea.
Definitely. And just to underscore what you said, and Phil has been alluding to too, this the aspect of reality hitting people, the latest figures, and these are official figures, which means they're lousy, for loss of jobs, and unemployment show that just in the last 7 years since the 2000 when the Cheney Bush administration came in, the United States has lost 3.33 million manufacturing jobs. Now, that's having lost 20% of the entire U.S. total when they took office, that existed when they took office. If you take the official Bureau of Labor Statistics for unemployed from whatever kind of job, we have 7.7 million people unemployed, and those who are forced to work only part-time are 4.7 million. So you're up into getting 12, 13 million, and that understates the unemployment in the country. So we have this situation, as Phil said, with one city councilman losing his job. Phil, I was looking at some of your 67 counties in Pennsylvania. I was looking at Monroe County. I think that's near New Jersey in the Delaware Valley. And they did a year-end report of their municipality, Stroudsburg, East Stroudsburg. And besides the rate of foreclosures and problems in the cities, little towns there, it just listed the companies that went out of business. One was called Laird Manufacturing. I don't know how big they were. So there's a revenue crisis all across the board. Do you want to, I mean, that's figured in some of the reality that's hitting people, I guess, that you've been encountering.
You're addressing me?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. No, I think what Chris mentioned about how the local members of these councils are really citizens who take responsibility for their community. It's absolutely right. And, in a broader sense, what we're building on here is the best aspects of this republic, of the Republic of the United States. It was built on that kind of idea, and you see it's a good expression of it in the attitude of these local council members who are, mostly, maybe all, ordinary people, no great political ambitions, and have significant responsibilities. In Pennsylvania, it's called a commonwealth, and which it comes from the Leibnizian concept of a general welfare and the general good, but also it refers to the fact that every square inch of the state is covered by municipalities that are assigned the job of carefully caring for the land and the people in terms of their education, the justice system, the roads, the infrastructure, the water projects, public works of all kinds. The counties are responsible for the elections, managing the judicial system. So the counties overlap with some of these smaller municipalities, but the boroughs and the townships and the cities basically cover every inch of the territory, which their responsibility is to care for that. And they take that, 99% of them or so, extremely seriously. Actually, in Pennsylvania, I was researching this a bit, that there's over 5,000 local government units in Pennsylvania. Some of them are authorities that deal with public works and school districts. But besides the 67 counties, there's 56 cities and 964 boroughs. The borough is like basically a small city. And 1,500 or so townships. Most of them are rural. Some of them are urban. And they have that responsibility. So, yeah, we're getting reports of what's happening in these local economies. I mentioned the thing about the gambling and the foreclosures in Bradford. We also had we have an issue with, I had a discussion with a councilman up in northern Pennsylvania about putting tolls on Interstate 80. This is something Governor Rendell is proposing to do, which is the interstate that goes from Hackensack to San Francisco, but it's always been no tolls in Pennsylvania, so the issue is putting tolls, and the governor's doing that. He's saying, well, if you don't agree to privatize the Pennsylvania Turnpike, he's telling the Republicans mainly, we're going to put tolls on Interstate 80, which are mainly rural Republican areas. And these local councilmen are getting whipsawed by this thing. They're screwed one way or the other. So I had a very good discussion with them on that. And they look at us as if we're throwing them a life preserver, a way out of this. And certainly we should look at this as developing long-term collaboration relationship with these local officials. And we're developing a network of let's say, collaborators on Lynn's policies, which is going to be the most powerful political apparatus in the nation as the crisis gets bigger and bigger. And in the context of the presidential election, all the elections coming up, and the growth of the whole economic crisis.
Right. And before he had to leave, Ed Hamler was talking about Duval Patrick the governor of Massachusetts feeling there was nowhere to turn except to slot machines. If you, I guess, have Felix Rohatyn give it consulting with you as to what your state can do. But that's been the case otherwise in Pennsylvania too, right? The Democratic governor Rendell has, and it's happening in Maryland.
Yeah, it's totally ridiculous. Windmills, you know, this is a big solution for us and putting windmills up and, yes, legalized gambling. He's been, ironically, Representative Harold James is the chairman of the Gaming Oversight Committee in the state, which is a very powerful position nowadays.
Oh, very.
But we thought it was very appropriate, given the fact we're talking about mortgage-backed securities and financial derivatives, that he would be the head of the Gaming Oversight Committee. No, it's completely absurd. People are outraged by it. It's totally divorced from reality, and it's not addressing at all the reality of what people are facing in these localities.
Right. Well, let me ask you a bit more. In the upcoming days, hours and days, not just weeks and months, but you're looking at many more of these, really, thousands of entities. You're looking at some dozens or hundreds to engage in this organizing process. This is a matter of people networking among themselves, or have you been traveling, or what more do you want to say?
Well, it's an interesting process because it is really a reflection of how this republic works. I mean, we've had visitors here from Europe and who are struck by this. We've had one of our organizers who's been organizing a lot in Europe who made some calls into some townships and expressed his surprise that their response from the township, let's say the clerk or the manager, they generally hire somebody to manage the day-to-day operations who's responsible for setting the agendas of the meetings and taking calls in the office and this kind of thing. And their attitude is, oh, good, send it over to me, send over the material, I'll put it on the agenda of the next council meeting. Instead of saying, sorry, we're not interested, we don't deal with that, this is a local area, what they would expect. Because these people in these boroughs and townships are public servants, and they say this is something important. And, of course, the fact that we have a resolution in the legislature definitely helps. But their responses, and these are mainly, I mean, I have spoken to some council meetings, different parts of the state, which have been very good. But for the most part, it's been calling up the borough office, the city hall, asking to speak to the borough manager or the city clerk, the city manager, and saying that this is what's going on. This is the collapse of the economy. This is LaRouche's program. We have a resolution in the state legislature, and we'd like the council to consider supporting it. I have some material. Okay, email or fax. You know, what would be best? So email or fax it to several pages to the city clerk, and what they do is they copy it, either photocopy it and put it in the boxes of all the council members, or put it in their packets. You know, the Friday before the meetings, they send out, they deliver packets to their homes with all the information they need for the next meeting. So they do it for us. They put it in the packets of all the council members, or forward the email in some cases. And then what you have to do is get the names of the members of council, look up their phone numbers in the white pages. Most of them are listed, and they expect you to call them at home in the evening or the weekends and reach a lot of people. I reached, you know, 7 or 8 just this morning at home, had good discussions. Some of them have got literature in the package. They already read it. One said, I already decided to support this. I read your memo. Send me a model, and, fortuitously or worked out well that the City Council of Newcastle, Pennsylvania, was the first to pass a resolution of support. It's a city of about 30,000 people in western Pennsylvania. That was on November 8th. And they did their own resolution, which turned out to be very good, summarized the basic points, and said that the Congress should take up these proposals right away. And that's been a model now that I've sent out to every other council, and they use it as a model. Either they take it directly and just put the name different, or they change a couple things here and there. And that's what they need. They need a model, which they can use for their local meetings. So generally, the borough officers have done the work in getting it to the council members, and our job is then to organize them directly. So at this point, you know, we do have 21 cities and boroughs that passed resolutions. I just added it up today. We have about 115 more that are considering it that I've talked to personally, either, you know, the borough council and trying to reach as many council members. Usually the 7 council members, try to talk to 2, 3, 4 of them at least to get support going for it. And this Monday, every single borough in Pennsylvania, 964, are meeting to reorganize after they have some new members with the elections last year and electing officers. And I think over 100 have this, before them, our resolution. And some may adopt it. Some of them will put it on the agenda for later in the month. So our objective is to have at least 30 more endorsements, councils pass resolutions this month, to get it up to 50 as a total. And then we're starting to work on the townships too, which I said are mostly rural, but we'll get them involved as well. So that's where we stand. So it's just really a mass outreach. You can reach dozens and dozens and dozens of these local councils, and they'll basically do the work in terms of distributing the ideas, and you have to organize the council members.
Oh, that's great. And Phil, let me ask, on this, in recent years, there's been waves of hitting the country of different kinds of area specialties, textiles or whatever. And Pennsylvania was, of course, steel, auto, machine tools, even food processing. That doesn't always figure. But some of these people that are responsible locally go way back and must know LaRouche from the Economic Recovery Act, from years past. Is that another
factor?
Yeah,
good point. No, that's our calling card, is we're okay. With LaRouche. I mean, one council member I talked to him said, I'm with the LaRouche PAC and LaRouche Committee, and here's what we're talking about. And then at the end of the discussion, he said, now you said you're with the LaRouche Committee, you said, right? I said, yeah. Now, is that the Lyndon LaRouche who ran for president? I said, that's who it is. Yes, that's who it is. And he said, good, because I want to make sure it was him. He's been right on this whole economic collapse. I know, I've been following him for years. So that was his response. And other cases, I get into discussion, say I'm with LaRouche Committee or PAC or whatever. At the end, they said, now you said, who'd you say you were with? I said, with the LaRouche Committee. Remember, he's Franklin Roosevelt, Democrat, ran for president. Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, go ahead. They just want to make sure we're legitimate, you see.
Yeah.
That if we're LaRouche, we're legitimate, and they could take it from there. I want to make sure. In fact, it was funny. One council had their borough secretary look me up on the Internet.
Okay.
And he said, I saw that. Wait, we looked it up. We did some research. I saw you're with a mortgage company.
Oh.
And evidently, there's a Philip Valenti with a mortgage company. I said, well, I'm sorry. I've never been with a mortgage company. So that would have really knocked me out. You know, with LaRouche is fine. Mortgage company, forget it.
Right.
So, no, definitely that's been a real basis for our authority, you know, being with LaRouche and his track record, et cetera, which is well known. It's funny, when the borough council in Nesquehoning passed the resolution, you know, Lyndon recognized that right away, because back in the 70s, he was very, he was in Pennsylvania campaigning, Lynn was, in 76.
76, right.
And he had the interest of the local politicians in the anthracite coal area, where he had ideas of taking the anthracite coal and using it for energy production in various high technology fashion. So I know at that time, you know, he had meetings with some of the local council members and county commissioners in that area. So he remembered Nesquehoning from that period, and some of these people are still around up there.
Good. Yeah, I know the state's pretty elderly, but maybe that's in our favor, right, Phil? They have a long...
That's the spirit.
Long political memory.
That's the spirit, yeah.
And I know I think a lot of your work is pre-electronics. I'm not telling how old you are, but if they could look up your name, you've been associated with projects like the Erie-Pittsburgh Canal and all the infrastructure that should have been done.
Yeah, at the Bethlehem City Council meeting, it was really tragic because you had some of these old-timers get up because... Every meeting has a public comment section.
Uh-huh.
This is one of the things interesting about this, where the citizens come, and some people are there all the time. You know, they know them by their first name, and they come up and talk every month. In this case, there was an old steel worker there in Bethlehem saying, look, I try to tell people when they say they hear I'm from Bethlehem, they say, oh, Bethlehem Steel. They said, yeah, well, that's not there anymore, but come and see our casino. We have a casino there now, and they have a Bethlehem Steel Historical Museum, and they have old equipment there. People can see the museum. It really brings you to tears to hear about that, but
it's terrible.
That's the situation.
It's like Homestead, Pennsylvania on the river there. They turned it into they kept only the smokestacks from the famous Homestead Works and turned it all into a shopping center, which is now collapsing. But oh, well, that's a terrific picture. Let me ask, in Texas, Chris, you're there, you may want to bring some more things out or ask Phil some questions that should bring some things out for people in their respective states all around the country. But otherwise, I wanted to ask you about the outreach connected to the youth. Campuses are back in session. You mentioned enlisting young people, or there was some person activated after a radio show. Could you comment on that also before the end of the hour?
Well, yeah, sure. This was a guy who was, I think he's from the south side of Chicago, and he was down here in Dallas, and he turned on the radio show, and John Wiley Price has this radio show in Dallas that he does every couple of weeks or so. And it's, he's a senior member on the Dallas County Commission, and everyone sort of, he's the guy that everybody goes to in Dallas if there's a real problem, because he thinks everyone else is on the commission pretty rabid, whatever, but anyway. But he has a very good educational show that he has discussions about, the problems that we discussed, because he's had Harley on there several times, and he's really good at asking the questions about, what is the higher principle, the higher governing cause behind the problems we're seeing in our local communities. And since Harley's been on there several times, this guy that we talked to was just someone who had tuned into the show. And he said, I'd like to meet up with you guys. And he came up and met up with us. And, he's someone who had, like I said, printed up stuff off our website and just started distributing it wherever he could find. I think he even called into the war room there in Leesburg and asked a few questions to the war room, saying, well, what can I do? Where can I go? What's a good place to go organize? And he even went down, I think, to Monterrey, and he distributed some of the stuff on the Plino and the Brigón when he was down there, which he expressed the difficulty in doing it. He's in the process of learning and wanting to actually act upon the crisis and not just be a passive listener or a spectator. And you're finding that more and more among younger people who are confronted with the crisis that we see today. So it was really good. Yeah, it was a really good meeting with them.
And do the campuses reopening figure in anything in any special way in the upcoming plans, or it's just part of recruitment is just part of the prospect for the new year?
Well, that's definitely something we're focusing on. It's in the middle of everything else we're doing. Like when we were in Dallas, we had several teams of people who were on the ground distributing literature and going to local campuses and talking to students and whatnot. Well, we had another group of people doing the political organizing with the local officials, the city officials, and the state officials up there.
Well, let me just ask this. You might have been traveling throughout Texas, or you might have been on a call, I understand, that took place last night at the LaRouche Youth Movement, where I heard tell that there were exciting plans for putting out in the coming days, organizing on the streets and elsewhere with two maps, you could say. One map of the world global chaos picture from Pakistan to Colombia, Venezuela to... And then the other map of the world land bridge. One is the British imperial way to look at things, and the other is the world development, LaRouche land bridge way to look at things. Is that true? Were you on this call last night?
I wasn't. Like I said, we've been traveling all over the state. So
okay.
We've been driving like nonstop, pretty much, and it's been a constant process of getting in touch with political figures in various locations and just briefing them as quickly as possible and making sure they have a clear understanding of what we're talking about. So we've been very busy in doing that. So.
Okay, well, I won't. I'll just encourage everyone to look on the website for the LaRouche Show. That's www.larouchepub.com, because in the next few days it will have this new color map of the kind of global chaos breakdown picture, and you can then compare that, and there are a lot of articles going with that, to the kind of development prospect, which is what we're organizing for in this emergency action, this HBPA, the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act. So, and well, Phil, let me ask you about that further in Pennsylvania or anywhere else you're involved with, is there a particular, you mentioned the LaRouche Youth Movement impact in recent years in Philadelphia, in Harrisburg. Is there any aspect that pertains to campuses opening up, or is it just a kind of mass effect in other ways?
Well, it'd be nice if there were a LaRouche Youth Movement initiative on some of the campuses here.
Uh-huh.
Right now, there's none that I know that are planned.
Right. So the scene of action has been among these really hundreds and hundreds of entities, the localities, the government level individuals. Is that what you're? That's
right. And also, I mean, I think it is a new political phenomenon because, you know, as in other states, there's regional divisions. You know, everybody's supposed to hate Philadelphia.
I'm from Western Pennsylvania. I can vouch for that.
Yeah, and the Democrats in the West, you know, hate the Democrats in the East.
Right.
And some are for gun control, and the others are for gun rights, and that's easy. It's a wedge issue, and that's how, you know, I'd say the Republicans, but that's how the neocons, whatever, try to manipulate things. So this may be what's happening right now. May be unique, or maybe not since the conference on internal improvements in the 1830s or something. Has Pennsylvania been so united on a policy? Because both the Philadelphia and Pittsburgh city councils passed a resolution, very similar one, where every member of the council, you know, co-sponsored it and voted for it. Both little towns and different parts of the state, big cities. So it's a phenomena that may be unique or hasn't happened in recent history, and it's going to be a major political factor to be dealt with by every member of Congress here, because we're getting a bit impatient with these people not acting on this legislation, and so we're just going to have to keep escalating the pressure with the confidence that the outreach combined with the reality of the financial crisis is going to crack the Congress.
Right. That was my next question. On the congressional front, it's been a stonewall, is what you would say.
Well, you could say that. I think, you know, we have a certain kind of dialogue with members of Congress. It was interesting that at the state legislative hearing on Representative James's resolution that Congressman Paul Kanjorski submitted testimony to the state hearing. It wasn't testimony that endorsed the Homeowner Bank Protection Act at all. But it said it was so important that the legislators are making it clear that they want action on this issue. And nobody can remember when a congressman has submitted testimony to a state hearing.
Is that so? And is he from this eastern anthracite, more broken down Wilkes-Barre area?
Monroe County, you mentioned.
Yeah.
And Monroe County was where predatory lending was first documented, really, because these builders enticed New Yorkers who could not afford to have a home in New York City, to move to the Poconos. It's only an hour and a half, two-hour commute one way, and they're going to build a train someday, you know, to New York City. And so people were ripped off massively, the New Yorkers, moving up to the Poconos to live, trying to get their kids away from drugs and crime and the houses they could afford. So he represents that area, and Wilkes-Barre, Scranton, the anthracite coal area, where we have a lot of support for this. And we're trying to, well, I shouldn't give away a secret. I'm trying to get his hometown to pass the resolution.
Sure.
We'll see.
Well, that's one of the major cities, even if it's being done.
Yeah.
And to recap again for people, what you've been bringing out about the physical economy crisis, I think Pittsburgh's been almost an official municipal bankruptcy. They use a politer term, I believe, in Harrisburg. Is it called financial distress or for several years? Is that the case?
Yes, I have to get more on top of that. I'm not sure where it stands at this point. But I know that in the resolution that they passed in the Pittsburgh City Council, they added a clause which said that last year, out of all the foreclosures in Pennsylvania, one-third of them were in the Pittsburgh area.
Right. So that this is the question of the recovery, the need for infrastructure and so forth is critical. On the infrastructure side, I mean, there's a lot of gradient in Pennsylvania. That is, if the rain falls too fast, too hard, you get floods. Do any of the municipalities in further discussions with you raise any particular infrastructure projects or not?
Well, they haven't yet. I mean, obviously in Western Pennsylvania, the maglev train has been there, you know, a long, long time. I don't know if they're growing cynical about this at this point, but one of the projects that's supposed to be considered is the maglev train from Pittsburgh to the Pittsburgh Airport to Greensburg, Pennsylvania, and which would be a link ultimately to Philadelphia and then further west. So we're going to have to take that up. We're focusing our fight on this, but obviously that's what we're going to have to take up as the whole fight progresses during the course of the year.
Well, I can't believe the hour has passed, but I think there isn't a better way to begin the new year by this fight. This is the all-important one. And I reiterate, January 17, that's a Thursday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Lyndon LaRouche will have a live video webcast based out of Washington, D.C. It's called 6 Months into the Greatest Crash Ever, and you'll find that on www.larouchepac.com. And this is the closing. I thank you both, Phil and Chris, the end of the January 5th, 2008 LaRouche Show. This is Marcia Mary Baker. Thank you, and let's make this the most momentous new year of all. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.